Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive. A short week of practice for the Bills. Today, they're in meeting rooms on the field late this afternoon for a light workout. 8-3, still the fifth seed in the AFC playoff picture. Holding onto that wild card spot with five games left. The Bills took care of Denver yesterday, a 20-3 win, holding the Broncos to 49 net yards passing. Tre'Davious White, fourth interception of the season. Devin Singletary, 106 yards on the ground, 21 carries. Frank Gore, 65 rushing yards. He became the NFL's third leading all-time rusher, 15,269 yards. He passed Barry Sanders. Now he's behind Emmitt Smith and Walter Payton. The Cowboys lost at New England yesterday, 13-9. Dallas, fourth seed in the NFC playoff race, but on top of their division with their 6-5 record. Cowboys at home on Thanksgiving, 31 wins, 19 losses, one tie. And they've hosted a home game on Thanksgiving Day since 1966, with the exception of 2 years, 1975 and 1977. So it's 4:30 Thursday, the kickoff, Thanksgiving Day. You can hear it right here on our flagship WGR Sports Radio 550. I'll have the call of the play-by-play with Eric Wood in the booth. Sal will be on the sidelines. And that loss, a significant setback for the Cowboys, according to their owner, Jerry Jones. After the Cowboys lost at Dallas yesterday, dropping to 6-5, they lost 13-9. Jones said, "I'm just really frustrated. I thought we'd come up here and put together a better effort. I expected us to play well against them defensively. We came up here, what we got, I think we did not get from our offense what we were looking for." Jerry Jones upset about the way the Cowboys played yesterday. Colts have put tight end Eric Ebron on injured reserve with an ankle injury. Played in last Thursday's loss at Houston, but he's out the rest of the year. Good Monday night football game tonight. The Ravens and the Rams. Baltimore at 8-2, a couple of weeks away from their visit to Orchard Park. 8:15 kickoff tonight at the Coliseum in L.A. Jaguars are going to stick with Nick Foles as their quarterback over Gardner Minshew. And the Sabres in Tampa Bay tonight, playing the Lightning at 7 o'clock. They won last night 5-2 over the Florida Panthers. We're back with another hour to go. John Murphy and Chris Brown. We got final hour of the show starting right now. And you are welcome to join us. Maddie Glab's going to join us around the bottom of the hour for the Maddies, her awards from yesterday's win over the Denver Broncos. This is your turn. We got phone lines open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Let me tell you what the Twitter poll is all about. That is a good place to start, we think, moving forward. And we will start talking a little bit about Thursday's game in this segment. But on Twitter, we are asking a pretty simple question. Your biggest takeaway from Sunday's win over the Broncos, what do you think it is? 850 votes in on Twitter. Most of you, 41%, say it was the domination by the defense. 32% it was Josh Allen's performance. 23% say the success of the run game. 4% have something else in mind. What do you think? 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You think defense. Biggest takeaway?
That, for me, it was just the way they were able to close out the game. Last five possessions, three and outs for Denver. I mean, Brandon Allen, 3 of 14 for two passing yards in the second half. Are you kidding me?
Right.
That is anemic. That is deathly anemic. And they couldn't do anything. I mean, they were just completely stymied by Buffalo's defense. And Leslie Frazier, another expertly called game. And then his players executed for him.
Yep.
And to me, the standouts on defense were Matt Milano at the outset, Tre'Davious White shutting down Cortland Sutton, and then at Shaq. The very end, Shaq, you know, kind of cleaning up on some pass rush. So just three guys stood out, but it was a collective effort for sure. And as you said, you know, we were talking to Rich Gannon, this is a team defense, like a true team defense. It's not a defense with a couple of stalwarts and then everybody else kind of holds the rest of it together. This is a team defense. Anybody could make a play. Really. I mean, if you think about it, anybody can make a play.
Yep. And they often do. And look, yeah, I can't disagree. The defense was a big takeaway, the biggest reason for the victory. But I want to say this, Chris, and we're going to get to phone calls. We got lines open here. I want to say this, and this is more of a two-game thing. The improvement we have seen over the last two games from the Buffalo offense really has me encouraged. I mean, really has me encouraged, because we went kind of waiting. You know, they didn't burst out of the box. They had 37 points at Miami. But there is steady and, I think, tangible improvement on the offensive side of the ball the last 2 weeks, which really gets me thinking really well about what they might be able to do here down the home stretch, five games left to play.
Right. And I think with this no-huddle approach, with the 11 personnel on the field, three receivers, one tight end, one back, I think that helps Josh because it scales down all the decision-making that has to happen.
Simpler.
Yeah, it scales it down. And then Dable, as is his way, kind of uses – he'll sub people in like he did yesterday. You know, Foster rolls in for Isaiah McKenzie, or you have Andre Roberts out there because maybe you want a better blocker on the field at the receiver position. They rotate Croft in for Dawson Knox. So, you know, there was enough in terms of changing the personnel based on people – not formation, that made it different enough. And I think, you know, they still try to stretch the field horizontally, you know, with Foster yesterday on the end around, and they've used McKenzie on those jet sweeps in weeks past. And I think it's just a good formula for this offense with the development level that you have in a second-year quarterback. And to Josh's credit, he's coming up with the right answers. And here's the other thing that I think kind of got lost in it. This isn't an up-tempo offense per se because they stand at the line. It's kind of like a muddle, no huddle, if you will, where they'll stand at the line and kind of survey things before snapping the football. But the bottom line is the defense is staying on the field. You look at those first two scoring drives. What was it, a 17-play drive and a 12-play drive?
Yeah.
I mean, that's 29 plays.
Yeah.
Your defense is on the field. On their feet, running around, getting ready, you know, expending energy. It may not have the same effect as one of those wear you out, call a play every 14 second no huddle offenses. You know, you want to go back to Kagan when they were running plays every 16 seconds. That wears a defense out. If you go 12 plays on a drive, they're not the same the rest of the game. But I think those two drives had a cumulative effect on Denver's defense the rest of the way.
And I mentioned the 4-minute offense, the end of the game, a 10-play drive that ate up 7 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the
– Well, they were beaten at that point, but
right.
Yeah.
It meant something. Let's take a call or two. Lines are open, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Biggest takeaway from the Broncos game or wherever you want to take us. Let's go to Dan in North Tonawanda. Hello, Dan.
Gentlemen, good afternoon.
Hi.
Well, based on your Twitter poll, I would fall in the 4% of people who would say something else.
Let's hear it.
For me, it's the overall offense improvement. And what I heard a lot in the offseason was the fact that a lot of different media outlets and former coaches and former players basically saying what the Bills did by bringing in 14 new offensive players and 9 new offensive starters, the word that I kept hearing was radical. These are radical changes, and the fact that your coach needs to be incredibly secure in his position in the organization because they are taking on a considerable amount of risk with how long it takes for players to become a cohesive unit because of all the changes in the CBA, which limit the amount of time they have in practice and limit the amount of exposure they have in the offseason to try and to bring all these new players on board. And I think what we've been seeing over the last 10 weeks is that time that it takes to get all these new players on board. And I think the biggest telltale indicator for me was seeing Dable going up into the booth and no longer being on the sidelines, which shows he's got a comfort level now. This offense is starting to gel. And I really do think that it is, like you said, Merv, it's definitely signs of good things to come. And I really do hope that they do continue with that no-huddle style. It's like you said, it's a modified no-huddle. But it seems to be that Josh has a good command of it. It seems like the players are responding to it. I do think that looking at yesterday's game, as well as the defense played, I don't want to take anything away from them, Denver's strength is not their offense and their quarterback making their third start in the NFL. The strength of that team was their defense. They were highly touted, and the Bills really took them to task and really professionally dismantled them. And I thought to me, you know, with going into that game, if you had told me that they would have been that efficient in a workmanlike manner, there's no way I would have agreed with you. But after seeing that, I really do think that with the Cowboys coming up, if they can continue that same trajectory, you're going to be seeing the hype they're going to get after that Thursday night, Thursday afternoon Thanksgiving game. I think that reputation is going to be warranted.
Yep. Hey, good points, Dan. Thanks for calling. And the one point he made about Dayball going upstairs showing confidence in his offense, I think it really shows confidence in Josh. He can leave Josh down on the sidelines now and be on the phone with him when he's coming off the sidelines and be in his ear and have a better look at things. But I think it's confidence in Josh and his progression.
Right, and as much as, you know, the success rate of the offense breeds confidence in the players on that side of the ball, there's also an effect that it has on the defense, because you see your offense moving the ball effectively and sticking it in the end zone or keeping that other team on the field third down after third down. That's a lift for your defensive unit too, because now you're saying to yourself, well, heck, if these guys can play like this against a top five defense, we really do have a chance. And, you know, this the emotional sport that football is, maybe that drives them all the more to lock it down on their end. And the way we saw them lock it down in the second half, I think, was indication of that.
Yep. Thanks for your call. Let's go to Mike in Wheatfield. Hello, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good afternoon, fellas.
Yes. Hi.
I just have one comment. It doesn't seem to have come up. There were a couple bad penalties, especially the one where Gore got one, and they could have had a touchdown. They ended up with a field goal. I don't know, the discipline there, or what's going on, do you think, going on there?
Can I just say this? You're right, Mike. There were 12 penalties,
too many.
They did have it under control, I thought, right? They had five penalties against Miami, seven against Cleveland, a little high. Only two penalties a week before against Washington. They had lowered their penalties per game down to just about seven going into yesterday's game.
And it had been as high as 8.5 earlier in the season.
So they were doing a good job, but it did. And I will say, let me say this too, and yes, they committed penalties. There's no question. But that crew came here to throw the flag, and they threw, what, eight flags against or they enforced eight penalties against Denver, and they enforced 12 against Buffalo. Those guys came here to call penalties, and they called every one. There were a couple of holds, and I'm thinking of a Feliciano hold, where I didn't see it, and I went back and forth this morning. I didn't see it. There were a couple like that, and there were like that against the Broncos too.
But, I don't have anything personal against Jerome Boger and his crew. I don't know them from Adam, but I don't like that crew. Every time I see his name on a sheet, I just bury my head in my hands. And I say, oh, boy, we're going to be in for it today.
And screwed up the coin toss.
That's what I was just going to get to. So he's got a commemorative coin. Okay, it's not a normal head and a normal tail, but he identifies which side of the coin is heads and which side of the coin is tails. He flips the coin. The Broncos call tails or whatever the hell they called, and it lands on the opposite side, and he says, oh, it's tails, you know, and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, it's heads. And I looked at the people next to me in the press box. I said, is this where we are
here we go.
The NFL?
Yeah, right.
Is this where we are? We're all the way back to Phil Luckett. We're all the way back there. I mean, we're going backwards.
Yep.
What are we doing? Come on, Murph. It's got to be better.
Too many penalties. You're right.
I don't know how you fix it.
They committed penalties, the Bills did, as did the Broncos, but they came here ready to
call penalties. I'm still talking about the officiating, though. And I know a lot of people were perturbed by the way the clock management went at the end of the first half, too, and there were some penalties there also.
Yep. And with 52, game and,
with 52 seconds and two timeouts, you should be able to get in field goal range if you're moving the ball as effectively as they were in the first half.
That was ugly. One more thing about officiating. And John Brown sat right here, and we talked about it. That was a terrible no touchdown call there. That was a terrible no touchdown call. And I said to you during the break, the Bills, because of the NFL's flawed, very flawed replay system, the Bills had to risk a timeout to get those
points
on the
board.
To get it right. They do somebody else's job. They had to risk a timeout. And how many of us at the game or listening or watching thought to themselves, I'm not sure if they're going to get this right in New York. I'm not sure if Alberto Riveron and his crew are going to get this right.
My confidence level was 60-40 at best that they were going to make the right call. And when I initially watched the replay, I thought to myself, oh, they're going to – I said, I'm trying to think to myself, why did he call it incomplete? Is it because the ball moved a little bit after he initially secured it? It, like, moved ever so slightly. I said, he still secures it at the end, and he completes the catch, his arms under the ball. Never touched the ground. I said, what's the problem? So I go to talk to John Brown after the game. John said to me, he called it incomplete because I tossed it aside after I got up. He said, you didn't complete the catch.
Come on.
I said, are you kidding me? That's why he called it incomplete? I said, even the refs don't know what a catch is anymore. Honest to Pete, they don't know what a catch is. They don't know. They're the ones wearing the stripes, Murph. How do they not know?
It's terrible.
They're schooled on this.
It's the worst.
Come on.
How many years have I said this? The weakest link in the NFL is officiating, and it has been for several years now. Don in DePew. Welcome, Don. Go ahead. You got something more you want to
say? No, I'm exhaling. I just got my blood pressure got up there for a second.
Don in DePew. Go ahead, Don. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. I got two observations. One, I believe that Feliciano is the better center for this team.
And Mitch Morse?
Yeah, you know, I've noticed, especially since the Eagles game. I watched Cox and company there. It's like the book on Morse. He's more of the technician. I understand it. And he likes to get out and run. And I'm watching guys, the defensive tackles, just drive him into the backfield and disrupting the running game.
I would hate to be judged on my performance against Fletcher Cox if I were a center, though.
I mean, everybody's doing it since then. And I also see it in this short yardage. You know, we try to get a yard on third and one going up the middle, and they're getting stuffed. Yesterday, you didn't see much of that. I just think, you know, I don't know if he's not trying, you know, get hurt. I mean, he's not sticking his head in there, I believe. But I just see him getting manhandled. You know,
I don't see that.
Another observation, I wonder if Chris can talk to this. He sees Josh during throwing sessions and stuff. Yesterday, it seemed like he was throwing a little bit, almost sidearm, like lowering his arm to get a little more touch on the ball, a little more air on it for finesse throws. And like the interception that he threw, it kind of he flicked it like a shortstop at a second baseman, but you know, got away from him. I'm just wondering if he noticed him working on that kind of thing to get the finesse throws in.
Well, I mean, he's never had an over-the-top delivery, ever. He's always had that three-quarter delivery where it's down under his shoulder almost. It's not even at shoulder height sometimes. And he has worked very hard on his mechanics, and he has worked to diversify his throwing repertoire. And I thought there was one on a crossing route that he threw yesterday where he dropped it over the defensive back. I want to say it was Beasley going to the Bills sideline.
Yeah,
going towards the scoreboard end. That was a beautiful touch throw on an extremely windy day yesterday. I mean, it wasn't Philadelphia game windy, but it was pretty windy going that way. And for him to put the touch on that ball and for it to get there the way it did, that is where Josh has really taken a step forward with his game. It's the short to intermediate game where he has made tremendous strides. And I think his completion percentage on things under 20 yards is about 65%. You can win with that, and we're seeing this team win because of that. And, yeah, hopefully everybody that was pining for the deep ball, you know, was satisfied yesterday with what may have been the most difficult throw of the game, throwing into the teeth of that wind, which was coming directly into Josh's face on the touchdown pass to John Brown. I mean, that was just – there's maybe five quarterbacks in the league that can make that throw in those conditions, and Josh is one of them.
Hey, what your biggest takeaway from Sunday's win? What was it? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-552-550. Yeah, let's get to the tweet sheet. Brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official movers of the Buffalo Bills. Get us started with the tweet sheet, would you please, Chris?
What number are we up to here, Murph?
We're starting with number one. We
haven't we are? Yet. Oh, okay. So this is from Big Multi. I really don't care to know what that means, but well, in any event, the Broncos scored 3 points in 60 minutes of football. They couldn't get anything going. Milano was a stud ball. Honorable mention for Josh Allen. He's getting better and better as the season goes. I'm so excited for Thanksgiving so we can show the nation we shouldn't be overlooked. You tell him, Big Multi.
Why do I not have that genetic predisposition to want to show the nation? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think the Bills are pretty good. I think they're pretty good. And I think any person paying attention would acknowledge that. I don't know that there's...
Well, then I think you just answered your own question. People don't pay close enough attention, so they follow the national narrative. Yeah. And so Bills fans are like, well, for the people that don't pay attention all across the country, this is a way to get them to pay attention.
All right.
And I think that's kind of where the rub is.
I just
right, from the very beginning.
I don't get hung up. I get hung up on wins and losses. Perception.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that much to me. I'm sorry.
You prefer to deal in reality. I get it.
I do. I'm a realist. James tweets this in. I'm going with Allen's performance. I predicted a 14-point win, and they did even better. Josh is starting to silence some of his critics. It's like they're thinking, wait, this kid might actually be pretty good. Seeing progress in every game, if he gets back on that deep ball, look out. We had a good conversation with Field Yates on the show last Wednesday, Chris, about the Josh Allen perception. And Field agreed with, I guess, my contention that there are many draft experts who are probably surprised, maybe even shocked, at the progress they've seen from Josh Allen. Not a finished product. He's not an elite. He's not even, you know, top-tier NFL quarterback, maybe in the first half of NFL quarterbacks. But if going into the draft a year ago, 2018 draft, if you laughed at the Bills for picking Josh Allen when they did, number 7 overall, you look pretty bad right now. And I think that colors a lot of perceptions about him and his development.
I'll bet that coming out of that game yesterday, there's a lot of Denver fans saying, man, we could have had that kid at pick 5.
Yeah.
And instead we took Bradley Chubb. And what was interesting to me, because I made a point this past week, because all of a sudden I'm seeing all of these predictions coming out of Denver. Like, Denver media thought Broncos were going to roll in this game.
Here.
Yeah. Like, who have the Bills beaten? They've beaten no one. We just went toe-to-toe with Minnesota. We had the game in the bag, and they blew it at the end. They're going to beat this Bills team, which plays good defense, but we'll win by a field goal or two and get out of there with a victory. Number four on the season. Josh Allen isn't all he's cracked up to be. Coming out of that game, I got to believe a lot of those Denver fans are like, dang, we could have had that guy at pick five. We blew it.
Yep.
And Bradley Chubb's a really good player, don't get me wrong. And he's sitting on IR right now. And maybe if he played yesterday, maybe it is a different game with him and Von Miller coming at you off both edges. But I don't think they're talking Josh Allen down now, not after yesterday. And, yeah, you can say all you want. He only threw the ball for 184 yards yesterday. But he didn't have to do a lot. And that's maybe the most encouraging thing about this offense. It wasn't all on Josh. The burden wasn't solely on him. You ran that thing for 244 yards with an offensive line that's really starting to gel and a young running back who's proving very quickly that he can be a dynamic weapon for you.
Bills, what's the biggest takeaway you get, Bills fans, from yesterday's win over the Broncos? On the phone, Bob in Orchard Park. Go ahead, Bob. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'd just like to say that I was definitely pleased with the Bills' performance yesterday. They're showing the last few games steady progression in the getting better. But I was also wondering why the tight ends, and this isn't a criticism, it's just a question, why the tight ends aren't involved more in the offense. Early in the year, there was a lot of buzz about Bills having signed Tyler Kroft and how good he was and everything, but he was injured for quite a while. But now that he's healthy and in the lineup, he doesn't seem to have much of a role in the offense.
Yeah, Bob, that's a fair question, and I keep expecting Dawson Knox to have a big splash game. Yeah. He's getting better. You know, he's hanging on to it. But that's a decent question. I don't know what the answer is.
Well, I did ask Coach a couple weeks ago, what's the next step for Dawson Knox? We've certainly seen him flash. He's made some exciting plays. He's showing that he can be a matchup problem for opponents. And he said the next step for Dawson is to be more consistent in everything, catching the football, blocking at the line, releases, route running. He, much like Josh Allen, is a very raw and unfinished product. The athleticism is undeniable.
Yeah.
I mean, Dawson Knox went to the combine and ran a 4.51 at 6'5" and 260 pounds. That's elite for that size and weight. So there are undeniable physical traits that you can work with and develop. But we've talked about this before, Murph. Player development here has played a critical role in why this team is where they are. Run down the list. I mean, Matt Milano, Tremaine Edmonds, and granted, Tremaine Edmonds is a top draft choice. So is Josh Allen. These guys needed player development, time on task, and fortunately for the Bills, they invest heavily in players that want to put the work in and want to get better. It was very important when Brandon Bean and his personnel department was looking for a quarterback for this roster, which was no secret to anybody, that they wanted someone who genuinely wanted to do what it takes to be great, not just coming in with a skill set and hoping it works. And when they found that Josh had a work ethic that matched his physical traits, they said, we've got something here. We can work with this and make it better because the kid wants to be better too. And that's not just Josh. That's across the board with almost all of the players on this roster, whether you have overachievers like Levi Wallace or whether you have supremely talented players like Tre'Davious White who still want to say, my number one goal is to wear a gold jacket when I'm done playing in this league. It makes a difference in the grind that is the NFL game.
So we got a lot of time tomorrow's show to talk about the Cowboys. Same thing on Wednesday. Steve will be here hosting with Matty Glab on Wednesday, but we should talk about the Cowboys a little bit because the game's coming up on Thursday. Dallas went to a torrential situation in Foxborough yesterday, lost to the Patriots 13-9. Did you see halftime on Fox? Did you watch much of the game?
I did not watch halftime. I was writing.
Rob Gronkowski had a classic.
I did see that.
Yeah, let's show the
that was very good
and listen to it. Rob Gronkowski, halftime on the Fox telecast, halftime of the Patriots home game against Dallas, and Rob Gronkowski had a halftime prediction.
When there's weather conditions like this, great, good defenses need to become great. And let me tell you, it's a vantage Patriots anytime there's weather. You want to know why? The Patriots practice in any conditions. If it's rain, if it's snow, if it's 100 degrees, if it's 4 degrees, it does not matter. Coach Belichick is making you go out on that practice field, and he's making you show up on time, even if there's a blizzard at 7 a.m. And let me tell you this, if there's a little rain in Dallas, a little snow in Dallas, Jerry Jones comes down and say, oh, do you guys want to practice in the bubble today? Well, that's why it's Advantage Patriots, and that's why they're kicking butt today versus the Dallas Cowboys.
I don't know if Rob is he a regular on Fox?
I have probably no idea. We're usually working. So.
Yeah, he probably should be.
Yeah. He's they got to help him with the wardrobe, though. He looked like a giant bruise there. Who put him in black and blue? What the hell was that?
Good for Rob.
That was awful. Somebody help him with the wardrobe. I mean, he's used to wearing track suits all the time. Somebody help him with the formal wear, man. Come on.
The postgame news was made by Jerry Jones. I'm sure that's the way he likes it every
Shocker.
Week. Jerry Jones, after the loss to the Patriots, called it a significant setback. Here's what he said.
Setback. For our team, we needed this win. We needed to win against an opponent like this. We haven't had them, and consequently, we're very aware of that. And so we dig a hole that we've got to really have a challenge as we look at the rest of the schedule.
Just a weird setup there, right? The owner meets the media after essentially every game, and doesn't he do a radio show in Dallas during the week,
yes.
I think? And Jerry, you always likes, know what he's thinking, right?
Jerry likes him some Jerry.
Is that the way you want it if you're running an NFL team? That's the way he wants it. Yeah. You always know where the owner is or what the message he's trying to put out there.
I was looking at some of the comments off of that clip that was on Twitter, and a lot of Cowboys fans naturally were chiming in, and he was saying that the poor play on the field was a reflection of the coaching. And the most popular response to that by Cowboys fans was, and coaching is a reflection of ownership. So they were turning it right back on Jerry. And I think the prevailing opinion, at least from the fans that were trolling on Twitter, and so take that with a grain of salt or for what it's worth, but the prevailing opinion from them was that Jason Garrett is a coach that should have been canned a long time ago. Yeah. They're done with this guy. And to a certain extent, Jerry Jones has already hung him out to dry. He does not have a contract after this year. And that is a very precarious thing and a precarious position to put your head coach in. Because when he demands things from the players or he wants things done, if they don't want him there, they're not giving the extra effort because they say, guy's in the last year of his deal. Yeah. If we lay down a little bit here and lose some games we shouldn't lose, he's going to be out on a rail.
Yeah.
And then we get a new coach, and I get, you know, kind of get out of jail free card.
Right.
You know, so I think that's a foolhardy approach for players to take. But I still remember the clip from early in the year when he's coming off the sideline after a field goal drive and he's looking to slap people's hands. Got players are just running by him. Nobody's giving Jason Garrett a low five, a high five, or 2.5. They're not giving him anything. And that told me right there, like, well, these guys aren't playing for him.
So the drama is you know, increasing in Dallas over the future of the coach. And this came out today. Did you see this? Somebody put out that if the Giants are in the market, the New York Giants in the market for a new head coach, Jason Garrett would be at the top of their list. Now, what does that do? That's maybe Jason Garrett and his agent's attempt to tell Jerry Jones, if you don't keep me, if you don't sign me back, I'm going to go to one of your biggest rivals and coach that team. So, you know what I mean? They're just stirring the pot. They can do that, too. Go ahead and do it. Do it all week. Talk about Jason Garrett's future all week long, the next 3 days. I'm in for that. I'm up for that.
Right. My biggest concern with this matchup on Thursday is Dallas's offensive line. This is arguably the best offensive line that the Bills are going to face this year. And I just have an inkling that Dallas is going to go back to what they do best and not get fancy. And they're just going to say, here comes Zeke with our line. Let me see you stop it.
Yeah.
And I really wouldn't be surprised at all if they go old school approach and just pound it at Buffalo and say, look, Philadelphia showed us you can't stop the run with a good back and a good line. Let's see if you can do it now. Let's see if you got it fixed. And I really wouldn't be surprised if that's the route they take.
That'd be the smart way to do it. All right, we're going to talk more about yesterday's game with Maddie Glab. She's going to join us with the Maddies, her awards from yesterday's Bills victory over the Denver Broncos. Come on back for that. One Bills Live presented by Kalata Health, live from the Seneca Studio. Seneca Resorts and Casino, nothing comes close.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. One Bills Live. John Murphy, Chris Brown in for the vacation. No, Steve Tasker's on his way back after a great cup. It's just, it was like a reflux.
Yeah, reflex.
Reflex.
I mean,
yeah.
Or reflux. Yeah, that would work too.
And Maddie Glav. Yeah. Maddie Glav is with us.
Get another
reporter,
sponsor
PSE.
In there, that one.
Hello.
Maddie is with us. She covers the Bills. She covers the Sabres. She hosts Bills Tonight. Last night you did the show with Fred Jackson again, right? How'd
it
go?
Did the show with Fred Jackson. It was fun. It's always fun when the Bills win, and it was extra special because Fred, of course, was a running back, and to talk about Frank Gore and his milestone day, as well as Devin Singletary and his career day.
244 yards.
Yeah. So it was a fun show.
Yeah. All right, the Maddies. Maddie comes in after a Bills victory and presents the awards. There it is. That's the trophy that will be presented to every one of the award winners.
Right?
The Maddies.
Look at this pre-roll.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
Yeah. It's great. The Maddies. What do you want to start with, Maddie? You want to go to offense?
Yeah,
let's start with
offense because the offense was pretty good.
Yeah.
So my MVP, it goes with the running backs. Frank Gore, Devin Singletary, great day. 244 rushing yards. The Bills haven't done that since the 2016 season. Singletary second in the league with yards per carry going into this game.
Yep.
So, and to just see what Frank Gore did, number three on the all-time rushing list. That is such a special day. And to watch Devin Singletary and his 106 rushing yard day. I mean, people talk about Devin Singletary being this slippery running back. He looked like a strong running back yesterday.
He was breaking tackles.
He was getting a lot of yards after breaking tackles. I mean, he looks like he is going to be a great running back in this league.
It was really cool to see Frank Gore hit his milestone, and I am privileged and honored to be able to call that play-by-play for what is a major NFL milestone, third all-time leading rusher. And yet, I'm more excited about Devin Singletary's milestone over the 100-yard rushing mark.
So was Frank after the game.
Was he?
Because we're in the locker room talking to Devin about Frank, and, you know, he's talking about what a pleasure it is to just be able to work with him every day, see him every day, learn from him every day. And Frank's in the locker right next to him, and he's like, yeah, but what about that 100-yard day? Tell him about your 100-yard rushing day. And first 100, that's a big deal.
That's a big deal.
And Devin wouldn't do it because, I mean, Devin's as humble as humble pie. And Frank comes over. He puts his arm around him. He goes, this kid had his first 100-yard rushing day yesterday. But Devin told us that he told Frank before the game, we're going to get you your 46 or whatever you needed, 46 rushing yards. And then he told Devin, well, we're going to get your first 100-yard rushing day today, too. And then it happened. It was crazy.
It's awesome. That
can
tandem.
We take the Maddies out of order? Do you want to? Because I think you're going to do this.
Yeah,
best quote,
should we,
right?
Should we lead into it?
Yeah.
So we kind of already teased it already, but we talked about Devin being in the locker room and his quote. But
No, you didn't.
You set it up perfectly. Okay. Because this is Frank Gore on the podium talking about Devin Singletary, of course.
Like a little brother, man. I've been ever since he got drafted. I had him in my hip pocket, and he listened to everything I say. A great kid, great natural. He gonna be got a chance to be real big in this league, man. He ain't gonna have no other choice but to keep working because I'm gonna stay on the phone with him every day, even when I'm done. You know, because he very humble. He kind of remind me of myself, man. Very natural, great eyes, great feet. And he bigger than what people think, you know. That's why he break a lot of tackles. And I told him, man, hey, just be you out there. And that's what he did today. And I'm so happy that he got the 100 yards now. I told him, hey, we got to keep going. We got to keep going now.
Matt is for the best quote. Boy, that's great praise from a future Hall of Fame guy.
And Frank looked really excited, of course, talking about his milestone. But then when he was asked about Devin, his face, like, lit up. And I think that is the perfect picture of what this locker room looks like, is the guys praising each other.
Yep.
You know, Frank Gore has this great day, but he wants to praise Devin Singletary. Josh Allen has a good day, but he's giving praise to his offensive line. The defensive line has four sacks, but they're giving praise to the secondary and the linebackers for helping them make that happen. So it's a complimentary team. They want to complement each other when they play complete football.
And that works the other way, too, because when somebody doesn't have a good day and the media inevitably goes to a player and says, hey, you know, Josh really struggled to get you the ball today, that player will put it on themselves and say, well, I could have run better routes. You know, John Brown is like a perfect example. He's like, well, I could have run some better routes, so Josh could have got me the football. So it's like they don't even point fingers when the things are going wrong either. So it goes both ways.
The Maddies continue. The defensive MVP. You may get an argument from Chris and I on this one. Go ahead.
I'm going with Trey White.
All right.
I think that interception came at a time where we needed that interception because it's right after Josh Allen threw his interception, the lone interception of the day. And Trey White consistently makes big plays when they need it. This was on third down, I believe, and he picks off a pass on Cortland Sutton, the number one receiver, and Trey White going up against number one receivers on opposing teams. He is shutting down these receivers. Terry McLaurin, he has 39 yards on the Redskins when we face them. Against the Browns, he shuts down OBJ. Against Cortland Sutton, Cortland Sutton was targeted 8 times. He only had 1 catch, and that was that 27-yard catch. This guy is phenomenal up against number one receivers, and it's amazing to watch him flip his hips, take those angles, and be so athletic against some great wide receivers.
You make a strong argument.
I thought his best play was not even that play, the interception. I thought his best play, he flips his hips outside because he's expecting the out route, and Sutton gets what he wants, and he tries a swim move on a quick slant, and he comes inside. This was going towards the scoreboard end. Comes inside, he has leverage on Trey, and he's beat him inside. Brandon Allen, it's that play right there. That pass break up there. That was from where his feet were to where he had to get to without even putting a hand on him.
Mm-hmm.
And break up that pass. I thought that was his best play.
I go with Milano as defensive MVP.
Milano had a great game. Really had a great game.
It's a 1 and 1A, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, you got a shout out. The Maddies continue with Maddie Glab. A shout out for yesterday.
Is this a new category?
Sometimes
is there always a shout out?
There's sometimes a shout out when I want to give a little bit of love to one side of the ball.
Okay.
It's shout out award.
You have free reign.
Yeah, exactly. It's my rules. House rules, guys. So shout out goes to the offensive line. Ty Insecki was not playing in this game, so you have the rookie Cody Ford going up against Von Miller. Well, Von Miller had a very quiet day against Cody Ford and Deion Dawkins as he was flipping sides, and then you have Mitch Morse come out early with that finger injury, and then you have John Feliciano move over to center, and then you have Spencer Long come into that guard spot, and the offensive line didn't miss a beat. They had some of those annoying penalties, yes, but to be able to still move the ball down the field and affect the game and put points on the board when you're playing with backups, I mean, that just shows the depth that they have on this team and on this offensive line, which you couldn't say that last year.
Yeah. The Maddies continue.
You couldn't say they had starters last year.
Best dressed.
Best dressed has to go to the guy in the stands.
I didn't see this.
No shirt. He was wearing shorts. Our Allen is better.
Our Allen is better. Okay. Very prophetic.
Best
Maybe we should call this
or,
best
or
undressed.
Least dressed.
Yeah, best undressed.
I
Although I wouldn't
great.
Use best in this category by any means.
It wasn't that cold.
Well, not for a guy with a boiler that big.
Well, you're indoors. You both are indoors. It wasn't
right.
that cold.
Yeah.
We had the windows open.
We were
in
down,
the radio
I was
booth.
Down on the field at the end of the game, and you went outside, right?
Yeah, I was outside for a little bit. It wasn't terrible.
Cold. All right, Maddie, we're out of time, but thanks for doing this. Come back every Monday, please.
Oh, of course.
Will you come back Friday? If
I'll
they
be, I'll
well,
be back
here,
at home.
She's here on Wednesday.
You're here Wednesday. You're hosting
Wednesday,
the show Wednesday.
Yep, co-hosting
you
with
and,
Steve
Stevie.
Tasker.
Who's going to be the lead dog there?
Can't
you
wait.
That out?
I don't know. Maybe we'll do rock,
fingers.
Paper, scissors.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Do
who's
that,
hosting
do
the
that
show?
Live on Twitter. I'll watch that.
Chris and I will be headed to Dallas, but Maddie's co-hosting with the great Steve Tasker.
Can't wait.
Yeah, we'll see you tomorrow, too. Steve will be back tomorrow. Thanks, Maddie.
Yeah, of course.
Maddie Glab from PSE. She covers the Sabres, covers the Bills, comes in here on Mondays after a Bills victory with the Maddies. Chris and I coming back. One Bills Live presented by Kalata Health from the Seneca Studio. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Okay, so what have we learned from today's show? It is brought to you by Skyworks, the official construction equipment rental company of the Buffalo Bills. Skyworks. We had a good show today. Chris was in, filling in for Steve Tasker, who returns tomorrow. What did we learn? Eric Wood talked about the Bills' victory over Denver and talked about the role that linebacker Matt Milano played yesterday. Here's Eric.
And I think we're seeing Matt Milano fully back from that hamstring injury. And, you know, hamstrings are tough because you sometimes you just don't want to push it quite hard enough to where you're the same player you were, because it could always tweak again. Well, I think we're seeing now that he's back completely. He's playing with a absolute ton of confidence. He is extremely physical out there. They're blitzing him well. The amount of space that he can cover sideline to sideline, I didn't know a few years ago this was going to be the linebacker that we were going to see him develop into. And the Bills are extremely fortunate because he is phenomenal.
Eric Wood and Matt Milano also on the show today. We had wide receiver John Brown on live with us, sitting right next to me here on the show. John Brown caught the touchdown pass yesterday, and we asked him if he's had any chance at all to reflect on his decision back in March to sign with the Buffalo Bills as a free agent. Here's what he said.
I definitely reflect on it a lot, you know, but I'm just happy, you know, God led me here to this direction because, you know, like I told you before, this wasn't a plan to come here. You know, I wanted to, you know, take a chance somewhere else. But now that I'm here, you know, I understand and, you know, I realize, like, I wouldn't choose any other place because there's so much loving and caring, especially from the players. Like, we have no selfish players. And, you know, I'm willing to go to war with them any day, and I'm just thankful to be here.
Thankful to have him here. John Brown, good to talk to him. Hey, Chris, you got me thinking about one thing that you mentioned. I'm trying to think of what we missed about yesterday's game, but you said something about Cole Beasley and John Brown. Tell me what the point you were making, because I thought it was good and we were kind of zipping through things. Cole Beasley and the routes he runs and how that works in conjunction with John Brown's doing.
Right. So yesterday, Denver, and I got this confirmed by the receivers themselves, were playing a lot of zone coverage. And their zone coverage is structured in such a way where it takes a lot of the outside routes away. So it was clear to me they were doing that in an effort to take John Brown out of the game. Now, what you give up when you do that is you leave a lot of holes in the middle of the field for players like Cole Beasley to either sit down or win quickly on slants. And so Cole and John knew going into the game that the opportunities were going to be in between the numbers in the middle of the field and not as much on the outside of the field. And so the hope was that Cole Beasley could win a lot inside and that they could take advantage of that. And his effectiveness inside, I think, is what eventually led to the opportunity for John Brown at the end of the game when he scored the touchdown that pretty much iced the game.
Really good point. I know.
And
I
it was a double move that John won on, too. And you saw the little hitch that Josh gave on that to get Harris to bite on the double move all the harder, because he bit on it hard. I mean, he spun around like a top, and the play was over.
Right back at it tomorrow. Chris, you'll be out covering practice for us, right? Tomorrow will act and look like a Wednesday, even though it's Tuesday. I don't like to play that game.
But so we'll get an update, hopefully, on some injured guys, because there are some people nicked up. Mitch Morse, most notable perhaps among them, Robert Foster, and Ty Nsekhe. You know, is he ready to come back? Where is Saran Neal in the concussion protocol? So hopefully we'll have some updates.
We'll have that news for you coming up on tomorrow's show. Our production assistants today: George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Honnelder, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torito, Kevin Cargis, James Roble, our producer, Jay Harris. Thanks for listening in. Thanks for phoning in. We'll see you tomorrow. Steve is back tomorrow. Come on back. One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health, coming from the Seneca Studio at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.